The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Citizens of Earth and all beings, both extraterrestrial and interdimensional. My name is Danny Roth, and this is Who Won the Week, Sci-Fi Wire's podcast dedicated to the top stories from the week in geek. I am joined this week by my co-hosts and friends, the Blurred Girl Kara Mahorn, and Sci-Fi Wire's own editor-in-chief, Adam Swiderski. Was that enthusiastic enough? Were you guys pleased with my...
Adam's never happy, though. So that
what?
Come on.
You guys, you know, everyone at home is going to get the idea that I'm this negative Nancy, and I'm not. I love
negative
things.
Negative Nancy, you're negative man.
Negative man.
We've covered
Sorry.
This.
Yes. No. Behind every negative man,
there is a negative
is a positive.
I don't.
Man, I don't know. I lost the thread of that.
That's okay. That's all right.
It's a bar tab.
Yeah.
It's wow. Okay. Well.
Good morning.
Good morning. It sure is early to be talking about alcohol, but here we are. It's been quite a week. All kinds of things happening. There, Jack Ryan new series dropped. Mm-hmm. There was an announcement about old Maddie Smith, the 11th Doctor. A bunch of other stuff. We'll figure it out as we go. Who knows? It's a mystery. There's a long holiday. We're going to talk about that too. Why not? But first, we've been doing this thing where we talk about stuff that we're like personally geeking out about. We've been doing it for a little while, but I don't know.
Yes, should we do it.
All right.
Do
wow.
It.
All right.
Do it.
All right.
Do it.
Okay.
Do it.
Karima.
Do it. Oh. Sorry.
That's right. I switched it.
Oh my God.
I switched it. He said do it one too many times, and I was like, I don't want to know yet.
I'm so not used to going first. Okay. No, I'm actually geeking out about several things. The one thing that hit me this week that I'm very excited about is Bleach, the live action movie, was announced. For those of you who are manga fans, Bleach, the manga that was in one of the longest running animes on television. There's a live action movie being made and it's coming to Netflix. And it's so funny because I tweeted this and people were like, oh, dear God, no, because they all had visions of Death Note. This is not a live action version made in American style. Even though it is produced by Warner Brothers, the movie actually was released in Japan in July. And it is directed by Shinsuke Sato. And I have seen scenes from this movie, and it looks really good. For those of you who are Bleach fans, it's sort of the origin story. If you watch the anime, it's like the first two mangas, and it's like the first four episodes, I would say, of the first season of Bleach is what it looks like they're doing. I have not seen the entire film, but I'm very excited about it, and I'm extremely excited to know that it is actually coming to Netflix within the next couple of weeks. I believe it's September 15th. So, yeah, I'm thinking of maybe having a live tweet or something of it because I'm a big Bleach fan. So
yeah, you guzzle that Bleach.
So all of you...
Is that like a term that people use when they're going to like watch a bunch of Bleach episodes?
No, because that's an American term.
Like, hey, let's drink Bleach.
but they do talk about Shinigamis, which are basically, for all intents and purposes, they're... I guess you would call them angels of death, I guess you would, is the best American way to look at it. And so there's a whole legion and hierarchy of these Shinigami that exist in a parallel universe. And Kurosaki Ichigo is a teenage boy who, and it's really funny, he is a substitute Shinigami, which means he has the power to go back and forth between worlds. And he's a normal high school student normally. And the rest of the time, he's in this very adult, very violent sometimes world fighting monsters, which are usually rogue demons and things like that. And sometimes there are people who just won't cross over that change into these demons that they have to fight on the other side. But it's it, the live action 3D animation for this looks really, really good. And that is what I'm geeking out about.
Wouldn't it be cool if that's what your substitute teachers got up to? Like, sometimes they're like...
Sometimes they're Shinigami.
They're like math, and then the rest of the time they're like...
Warriors.
Yeah, like fighting ninjas and stuff. That'd be pretty cool if I could just assume that. I would probably... I would value and respect my substitute teachers. Maybe this is a problem that I have with the education system.
If it was a substitute... But only if it was a substitute, like, phys ed teacher.
Then no, really... I want it to be anything. I want it to be like, all right, we're going to anti-differentiate this bitch, and then... I'm going to beat the shit out of some robot ninja werewolf. I know
there's a manga somewhere that already has done that.
I'm sure this has been done.
I know there's a manga somewhere with an inappropriate dressed little girl that is...
You brought that up. I don't know why you're trying to get me in trouble. I was just saying robot ninja werewolf. I don't... You know what I mean?
I'm getting off this. Okay, so Adam, what are you geeking out about?
I am transforming, not myself. So my parents recently moved.
Oh, wow.
Out of our childhood home. And
did you have to go get your stuff?
I got some stuff. And it was more like, here's all your stuff. What do you want out of it? And, you know, there were certain things that I was willing to part ways with. A lot of my Masters of the Universe stuff went to my nephew, who is much younger and like 7 years old, and he loves it. But there was a lot of the Transformers, you know, and these are old school Generation One, and I don't know where the generations like dividing line is. Like, I don't know if Skyfire is considered or Jetfire is considered a Generation One Transformer or not. I have no idea. But that's kind of the era.
When the company
that it was.
Got sold, it's like
up through like your Shockwaves and your Jetfires is kind of what I had, and so I was like, I want to see if I still know how to transform these things, or if I can figure it out through intuition, you know, and they did not give us a lot of hand holding when we were younger.
No,
I will say
didn't.
That. And I'm dating myself very much because these are like old toys, but there's a lot.
Meanwhile, you give it to the 7 year old and he's like, here,
there's a lot of metal and there's a lot of,
we could just Google it.
Things that that's the challenge.
That's cheating.
Danny.
You can't do it that way.
So anyway, but no, and the thing is like, you will very easily.
You're right. That kid's never going to learn anything if he doesn't.
No,
out how to transform.
I'm not saying for the kid. I'm saying for myself.
No, you know what's funny though is you said it's metal and they don't allow toys to be made with
true.
That diecast.
Oh yeah,
anymore,
I know.
Right?
So and you can like they don't kind of make it impossible to break the thing. Like you can very easily break something when you're trying to transform
and
put it.
Put your eye out.
It doesn't reach a stopping point where you think it should stop. It's just kind of bendy and then you're like, snap. Oh, crud. You know? So it's been an adventure trying to remember. And I think, you know, for the kids, obviously go Google it. You can figure that out. But it was just more me trying to dredge up from the very depths of my memory cellar, like how to play with these toys that I used to play with when I was very, very small, and then enact telenovelas with them. That's what I do now. They don't fight battles anymore. They have romantic entanglements.
I love how you use your Transformers to reenact telenovelas.
I kind of write my own. It's more of these just like, I'm not interested in them fighting anymore. I more want to know like what their inner monologues are and what their stories
in
are.
In Spanish.
Yeah, exactly. And all my Transformers are Spanish for some reason.
That's awesome. I want video.
Yeah.
I need you reenacting this. We need this on YouTube.
Anyway,
we can make so much money.
But the thing is, I was actually surprised at how many of these things. I mean, part of it's kind of like figuring it out as well. I can't say that I explicitly remembered every step going along, but it was fun to try and to dig into these things that I hadn't touched in literally probably 30 years-ish. So
now we know that Adam's over 30.
Oh, my God. No, I'm way over 30. Yeah. So that's kind of been a little geeky adventure for me.
That sounds really cool. Did you bring them back?
I have
with
a few.
You?
I have Jetfire is on my desk upstairs. Here at 30 Rock.
You could probably lay them out in the office, and that's a pretty nice collection.
Yeah. So I mean, I didn't have a ton because back then it was more like I'm going to get these ones and my friend's going to get the other ones and then we're and all we'll going to get together and we'll play with each other's toys and stuff. But
before the internet.
But yeah.
When you actually
exactly.
went to your friend's
there was
house.
No, yeah. So, you know, my collection was not complete. I don't own a Megatron. I did have Shockwave. Shockwave was cool. You know, I've got like old school Optimus Prime where his arms are attached basically to the side of his body and
can only
bend at the elbows. Yeah, so that's, like I said, at a certain point, I aged out of it before they got really, really interesting and complicated. I never had like Metroplex. I could have had Metroplex. That was in my era, but I was always jealous. I knew one kid who had Metroplex.
Yeah, my I used to steal my brother's and they would be so mad at me.
Yeah.
Because I liked, Soundwave was the one with the tape deck, right?
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, I would take the... I would take the tape deck. I would try and shove real tapes into the tape deck and stuff. They're like, you're breaking it. What are you doing?
I didn't have the tape deck. I had several tapes, though. I had Rumble and Rampage and Laserbeak. I think those were
the
three.
And then one of them got one that was the size of a real... No, that was my uncle, who had one that was the size of a real tape deck.
No, that's so cool.
And it was... when he wouldn't let us touch it. It was very funny. He was like... I'm like, why did you come here then? Like, why did you bring this to us and then tell us we can't play with it?
I did have... the microscope, and I can't remember what he was called.
Off the top of my head,
it was like reflector, whatever. But he worked as an actual microscope.
Yep.
I mean, not like an electron
microscope.
That was
clearly not in the animated series.
Yeah. No, he was. He was in the, he was like the scientist of the Autobots.
Oh, wow.
You know, and they were like, oh, we need to examine this piece of evidence. So he would transform into this giant microscope, and then they would...
An Optimus Prime
looking
at him.
Yeah, this is definitely Energon, you know, so anyway... That's been a lot of fun, and, you know, I'm not saying that I'm playing with toys all the time, but I'm not saying that I'm not either.
And I'm saying I want video.
Yeah.
Ay, Dios mio.
Danny, how about you?
Man, I don't have anything like fun past toy thing, but I watched a video right before I left.
Good podcast.
Bye, everybody. So long. No, it was good. It's from this guy. He does this series called Movies with Mikey, and he is largely a pretty upbeat guy. He's mostly like, these are things I liked. Here are extensive like analytical reasons for why I liked the thing. And he did one about Avengers Infinity War, and he was pretty critical of the whole Thanos thing, but I have to say it was the first time I had sat down and listened to somebody speak extensively about it, and I thought, like, maybe I will watch it again, because I hated that movie so much, and he talked about it for a while, and he talked about certain merits, and I don't know, I just thought it was really interesting to sort of watch somebody who, for the most part, makes a career of talking about things they like, say, okay, I am really struggling because this thing that in part I loved and thought was so well made also simultaneously did some things that were kind of hurtful and
problematic.
And looking at it like, okay, so like this Thanos character, having him win and having the story be... that abuse and love can be one and the same, like telling that kind of story, what is the real world consequence of that? I thought was a really thoughtful tactic to take. It was one that he did without being insulting or callous or cruel to anybody. And I thought that was a really, I think it's probably one of the like, because it's not a hot take, right? You know, people will be like, here's my hot take. And it's kind of, you know, somehow like really sharp and mean somehow or whatever. Like,
well, there's usually with hot takes, there's no explanation. It's just like, boom, I'm dropping this and I'm walking away. It sounds like he had a really
I just thought it was a really thoughtful piece of video. And it's called Let's Talk About Thanos, and the series is Movies with Mikey. And the channel is called Film Joy. And I would highly recommend it. It was a really good video. And that's our show. Bye.
Okay.
You know what else I've been addicted to on the online, and this is, I blame this on my boyfriend, but a lot of those Watch Mojo videos, like, let's show you all of the horror movies that are, did all of these things, and or that had horrible endings, or that had great endings, or, you know, most messed up things on set. Like, for some reason, I've been watching a ton of those, and now I'm a bastion of insignificant information.
Well, that's good because you work on a podcast.
Who needs it? You got to be that.
That's the only thing I can do with this information. That is what podcasts are for.
Indeed.
Hey, do you want to talk about Star Wars? I guess we can start. Sure. You want to start with the wars and the stars. Hey,
the Doctor.
They were like,
the Doctor's coming to Star Wars.
Yeah, they're like Star Wars Episode 9. You know what that thing needs? A guy that loves staring at his hands and is like, ooh, these hands are very, you know, like, that's Matt Smith. Anyway, Matt Smith's going to be, he's got a thing. He does this stuff with his hands. I realize we're on a podcast, so you can't see what I'm doing with my hands. But he really does. Go back and watch Doctor Who. He's constantly doing hand things.
He's doing hand things. Hand jive.
Yeah. He was born to do it, really. But yeah, he's going to be in Star Wars Episode 9. He's supposedly going to be in a key role.
But we don't know. They didn't announce
what the role is, but okay. I was like, key role, you know. On Doctor Who, they had a whole season that was called The Key to Time.
I think he's actually playing a key.
Oh. But a key to what, Adam?
I don't know.
All right. Do you want to actually take a shot and be like, okay, Matt Smith's going to be in it. Like, what do we think he's going
to
be in?
I absolutely do not want to take a shot at that.
Okay.
Personally, you guys can do it. You take a shot.
No, I can't. That's,
He's a British guy.
He's going to be part of the Empire.
He could be part of the First Order. That's kind of the thing. Yeah, that's the default setting. So that's the first thing that jumps to mind, is that he will in some way be a villain in the First Order, or in some way associated with the First Order, you know, and that tracks with his appearance in Terminator Genisys. Maybe he's trying to go for this whole villain thing after being everybody's hero for several seasons on Doctor Who. So who knows? That would be my first guess because it's the easiest and most basic one.
I think he's going to be a Doctor Who that is a bad doctor. There you go, nailed it. He'll be a doctor, but he'll be really bad at being a doctor.
Yeah,
like he'll be like Dave Foley in that Kids in the Hall sketch, where he's like, hey, you know what this is? Urine. I ask for it, and people give it to me. I don't know what to do with it. I mean, I could like send it to some technician, but you know, they just like send back results that I couldn't possibly understand. That's the role that Matt Smith is going to play.
Right.
Nailed it.
He's going to be Boba Fett's son.
Oh no. What is that? What is Boba Fett's? It's Jango Boba.
Out for revenge.
You said out for revenge.
Dookie Fett.
Whoa.
Dookie Fett. What? Yikes.
Also, that's you're whitewashing the Fetts right now.
Dookie?
No, because there's this whole theory that the Boba Fett that we know from the original trilogy is not the same, because at one point they were talking about this being a thing where when they made the Boba Fett movie, spinoff movie, which now is highly in doubt, the idea would be that someone had killed the Boba Fett from the prequel trilogy and taken the armor and taken up the mantle of Boba Fett,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to it being the Boba Fett that we know Attack of the Clones.
Now that I've seen what they did in Solo, there are things and people, actually we can talk about it now. Like, there are characters that came back that we were like, how'd they get here? And they were like pulling from the animated series and pulling from the books and things like that. Now I feel like I have to go back and watch the animated series and read the books.
But I'm calling it Dookie Fett.
Dookie Fett.
Yeah, I need that.
You got him. I mean, like, it's interesting though, the connection between Doctor Who and Star Wars, isn't it? Because they had David Tennant played like a robot. He played a droid in Star Wars Clone Wars, and now you get your Matt Smith. And in the very first Star Wars, when the Millennium Falcon goes to hyperdrive, it's the Tom Baker era time tunnel that they go through.
I did not know that.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow. See, this is that trivia I'm talking about.
So there's the two things are kind of inexorably tied to each other, which is interesting.
Yeah.
You know, not in a way where like they're going to do a crossover and like the Doctor's going to show up, but like, you know, but they, people that do the Doctor Who's also sometimes they do the Star Wars.
True. It's all very British, so you know.
It is pretty British. I think you're probably right that he'll play
British,
a villain.
Is Dominic Monaghan
also cast, yeah.
Is he British or is he Irish?
Australian? New Zealand?
No, he's Irish.
Irish. Okay.
Okay, I don't know.
You all, everybody. I just hope he sings that. That's what he is. He's like, there's going to be a new cantina scene, and he's going to be the singer.
There you go.
And here's the other thing. We don't know whether or not Dominic or Matt will be visibly seen. Because remember, I remember getting extremely excited. Every Star Wars, when you hear the casting, it's like, yay. And now I go, wait, but will we see their face?
Right.
Will it be on? Will be mocap?
Yeah,
thank you.
Not facially in the film.
Nope.
Not facially.
That's true.
No, she wasn't. It was all, which was, I think, completely waste. But that's just my I liked her character. I just wish that we could have seen her.
Yeah. Anyway, I think what should happen after that is that all of the people from the Star Wars movie will wake up on an island.
Oh God, no.
Where they're lost.
You know what's really funny? I think because I blocked out Lost, when I look at Dominic Monaghan, sorry. I think Lord of the Rings. Yeah. I do not think Lost. I completely blocked that out.
So like I said, Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, that's what's going to happen.
It's going to be an epic Lord of the Rings, Star Wars, Doctor Who
crossover.
With Felicity.
Yeah.
Oh my God. So yeah, the characters will have the little thought bubbles and things. But
no Lost, because y'all hating on Lost.
Yeah, no, because Lost just has, you know, it'll just be plot development that disappears.
But that's the most likely thing that they would bring in, though, because Bad Robot's making episode 9, and they made Lost.
True.
So I'm just saying that that's the crossover that's actually going to happen.
So we should look for plot holes that we can drive a truck through.
I think that Matt Smith is going to play, what is Simon Pegg's character's name? Unkar Plot?
Plot, yeah.
He's gonna be like his nephew or something.
He's out for revenge.
Yeah.
Oh, no, because Unkar Plot did not... In the original, there was a cut of the film or original version where Unkar Plot got his arms ripped off by Chewie.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's so weird.
For Force Awakens. I know, yeah. So,
is Simon Pegg one of the only actors that's in both Star Wars and Star Trek?
He is one of the
and
only
the later.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Anyway, yeah. He's gonna be related to Unkar Plot. That's what's gonna happen.
And he may or may not have
his
arms.
His name will be Dookie Plot.
Oh, see, I was gonna say actually Unkar is the family name.
Right, okay.
So like you've got Unkar Plot and he's gonna be Unkar Key, because he's a key character, you get it? So Key and Plot.
Oh my God.
Got him.
Key Plot and Dookie.
We should move on from this subject.
Okay.
It's only going to get worse from here.
It is.
Is it? I mean, I don't know how it could, but here we are. I mean, anything's possible. What do you want? What on this list?
It's also the Power Rangers 25th anniversary.
It is. It is that.
It is indeed.
And we have to acknowledge this because in honor of Andre Black Nerd, he is a huge, 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 huge Power Ranger fan.
Yes, and Andre Meadows.
We should have had him on for this episode because I was talking to Danny about this before the podcast. Like, my knowledge of Power Rangers lore ends after like the original cast.
He knows.
I'm sure
both. Yeah.
He knows it all.
Although the other thing I have to say is that I found the movie, the recent film, surprisingly enjoyable. Watching it on a plane. I think I talked about that in this podcast a while back.
I also enjoyed it. I also I saw it in theaters and I thought I like this. I mean, it's not the greatest thing I ever saw, but I enjoyed it. I watched, so there was a special with the current cast, and then they bring back a bunch of legacy Rangers.
But it's not a special separate, it's like an episode within the current season.
Yeah, it's an episode within the current season, and so I think that sort of like the general complaint for that stuff is that as a result, that means it's still, you know, 23 minutes. And you're like, that should probably be an hour.
Because it's, But if you went to Power Morphicon, which was very recently, as also Andre did, and I actually didn't realize that the Power Morphicon was happening. It's a convention for Power Rangers fans exclusively. And they had a lot more original actors there, which I thought was just fascinating. And it's interesting. I've heard a lot of people this week, like, I don't understand what the big deal is, but I remember, Adam, you mentioned something like this recently when we were all talking about Jurassic Park and you said how we're like Jurassic Park, okay, but you were saying it's like the Star Wars right. for some people
for
now.
A younger generation, yeah,
exactly
yeah.
the same way like the Incredibles, like well, I was when the Incredibles 2 came out, there were people in the theater like, why are these kids in my way? This is the movie I've been waiting for my whole life, and I'm like, really? And I thought about it. Wait, yeah, actually, it might have been. So I think that's the thing. It's the 25th anniversary of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, let's be clear, actually, which is the American iteration.
Yeah,
it was
it's
Japan.
The first time it was
yeah.
called Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, yeah. so, you know.
So, but it's interesting, though, because since it is the 25th anniversary, there are people that are like, I don't know.
Old?
Yeah, I guess like us, who remember it and remember. The funny thing about it is it was just the simplest concept to put on TV and put in so many different languages because the characters, most of the Rangers' mouths didn't move. When those helmets came down, their lips didn't move.
Yeah, I mean, you could change a lot. I mean, that was the whole idea, right, mm-hmm. Sabam? Was like, hey, we want to make a thing that appeals to American audiences. So their idea was, you know, like teenage kids dealing with school problems and then also fighting monsters.
And they spliced together so much older footage.
Right. They did.
That they knew that we would have never seen.
Well, I mean, you know, like the Yellow Ranger, Trini is a boy.
Yeah.
That's why the Yellow Ranger doesn't have a skirt, because that's actually a boy in that costume. And that's the thing I know.
Well, no, and then also like how non-PC it was and how they had to make it more PC for American audiences, things like that. And it was just interesting, just the whole, I guess, trajectory of the franchise. But as you said about the movie, you were saying you liked the movie. What was interesting was I don't think the movie did as well as people thought it was going to do because they targeted it to an age group that didn't really know it, I think.
I don't even... that's like such an interesting
But how do you make
question.
A Power Rangers movie for adults now?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know who... Yeah,
the generation that grew up with Power Rangers is adults now, and you
that's
can't...
That's true.
Like, so, I mean, I guess you could bring them back and be like, oh, we're getting back into the Power
Rangers.
Like,
no, that would maybe be a story. Maybe for the kid. I don't know. I kind of feel like... Teen Titans Go has done this, where it's like they were older characters, they made them younger, but made the jokes and the writing for adults to adults who brought their kids.
Well, kind of. I mean, some of the jokes are kind of adulty, like the in joke stuff
yeah.
is. Yeah, I don't know. I can't. That's yeah. I think it's really interesting thinking about Mighty Morphin Power Rangers as something as being politically correct, and it's like. Is it? It's just so funny to be like 1993 era political correctness is.
Well, the
we
issue
got this
was,
black guy and he's the Black Ranger.
No, but
and
that was what they had to change.
We've got this Yellow Ranger and she's Asian.
No,
and you're
but
like,
that's what had to change. That's what I'm saying.
They changed it pretty yeah. quickly.
They had to change that
like,
before American audiences because they were like,
no, that was
is,
no, but the
no,
first,
in the first
no,
generation,
the first
of,
generation,
yeah.
that was it. It was like yeah. the Yellow Ranger was Asian. The Black Ranger is black. The Red Ranger was Native American, wasn't he? Am I crazy? I believe they did say that. No, I think he might have actually. I think they might have written in that
he was
Native American.
And then the Pink
descent.
Ranger was
a girl.
Girl.
Yeah.
And they eventually. I mean, like that. The Pink Ranger thing. I don't think they ever really. I don't think there was a lot of changing on that front. But they did eventually correct all the rest of it.
I think they lost the skirt after a while.
And the Blue Ranger was a blues man.
Was he blues man?
He played a mean harmonica. We didn't see it on screen, but they talked about it a lot.
Yeah, yeah. And the Brown Ranger was Scatman Crothers.
This is my own headcanon. Exactly, yeah.
Got it. Because scat is the word for poopy.
I used to watch that. I was in college. And this is, again, man, everybody's going to know how old I am. But when Mighty Morphin Power Rangers first
Stop
came out
telling
and was
people
big,
this.
We would sit in the lounge of my freshman dorm every afternoon and watch Mighty Morphin Power Rangers and let the numbing effects of the fact that it follows the exact same formula every single time.
Oh, yeah.
But that's the thing, like,
us.
If you were a kid prior
I'm not saying
to that,
that in a
and
bad
watched,
way.
Yeah, but that's the thing, like, I...
That's why you liked it, the numbing yeah. effects.
When
or
I was,
you were yeah. high.
Yeah, when I was
I
like...
I was not.
Uh-huh.
No,
so
I wasn't.
When I was like, yeah, whatever it was, 5, 6, 7, I was watching Voltron. And Voltron yeah. and Mighty Morphin Power Rangers are, like, very, in my mind, like, the formulaic nature of them was virtually identical. Because
right.
it was like, here's some people... There's a monster and they're fighting the monster and then the monster gets really big so then they have to take their robot lions and make them into a big robot man and then like
yeah
like,
but you know what's funny
it's the I same
think
thing
I think that's the reason why so many people confuse the Power Rangers with Voltron because of that Because it was weird. I was more of a Voltron fan than I was a Power Rangers fan. People are like, how can you say that? The same thing. And I'm like, but they're not. But I don't know.
The reason is because you're old. That's why.
You know what?
That's why. Because you saw Voltron first.
And it's not like G.I. Joe and Transformers and the cartoons that
Which
I watched
animated
for kids
first, yeah.
Were not formative. But it was like, at least in individual episodes, they kind of solved problems differently.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like Power Rangers because
Power Rangers, they solve the problem the same way every time.
I like the bad guys. Am I wrong?
Oh, yeah.
That was the reason that I watched. I watched for Bulk and Skull and Rita. That was it.
Yeah.
And I guess Goldar.
And whatever crazy-ass monster they would come up with every week.
I love that stuff.
That was fun.
But yeah.
And the make my monster grow moment.
I really appreciate that Rita has become such a touchstone and such a meme now.
Yeah.
Where like whenever somebody is like mad on the internet, they'll post like...
A Rita Repulsa.
Yeah, they're like, cry baby, cry more. Like, it's really good. Yeah. This is really enjoyable.
I will say that's an interesting... Like if looking back however 25 years ago to when this came out, if you would ask me, will we be talking about this show 25 years from now? I never would have said that.
No.
And here we are.
Yep.
It's a freaking, it's an institution, you know? And it's amazing that it's had that kind of legs.
Here's the thing that I realized, and I said this before the podcast started, but I'll say it again for you. So the episode that aired, they did a whole bit. Like this is, so like the big deal from this episode, the thing that's relevant is that they bring in some of these legacy Rangers, and one of them, the current crop of Rangers, recognizes, but the other two, they don't. And the Ranger that they recognize is like, so these two are from parallel worlds. They're from an alternate reality where different stuff happened, but there are Rangers in every reality.
Okay.
And that's the first time they've acknowledged a Power Rangers multiverse.
I think in the comics they might have done that before.
But that's different. The comics and TV is different.
Yeah.
So it's the first time in the TV series that they've acknowledged it.
Parallel universes.
And not only did they do that, but then they also did a thing with Tommy, because of course Tommy is like the one that shows up every time. Like if you're going to do a legacy thing, you got to have like that.
You got to have Tommy.
You got to have Tommy. He's like the most beloved character, I think, in the history of Power Rangers. But he had like his own, like he had like a different device that he used so that he could be every version of himself. So he would like, he did like one of the Red Ranger things, then he was the White Ranger, then he went back to being the Green Ranger, like all like one rapidly after the other in order to fight a person. So those are kind of cool things that came out of it. But then I thought, wait a minute, like we've got to work together to deal with realities being split apart. And here are earlier incarnations of the same guy. And I was like, wait, how childish and silly can we think Mighty Morphin Power Rangers is when it's exactly the same as Doctor Who? These are beat for beat the same plot lines. Like this is exactly the same stuff that I've been watching on Doctor Who since 2005. Same exact storylines.
No, I completely agree. And one of the things that I always wondered was why they couldn't make Power Rangers a little darker. Do you remember the?
I think one of the iterations was kind of dark.
Well, no,
one pretty dark? There's like a Time Rangers one.
That is true. And then there's another one like involving the White Ranger where everything involving Tommy is dramatic.
Yeah, it's okay for it not to be dark.
No, but I'm saying there's an interesting version that was no one wants to call it a fan film, but that's what it is. That Adi Shankar produced, that James Caan directed, that had...
James Caan?
I'm sorry, Joseph Caan, not James Caan. Sorry.
I was like, wow, he...
Joseph Caan, no.
Wait, what a late career. Vanderbeek one?
Yes. And
that was good.
What's her name? Starbuck. Katie Sackhoff.
Sackhoff,
yeah, was the Pink Ranger. And she was like... It was hardcore. It was the middle of like one of their wars, but it was pretty dark. And but I was like, huh.
Well, but that's the nice thing about a multiverse, right? You could do whatever you want.
But that's what I'm saying. That's what I was going to make. It would be interesting if some of them came from the multiverse and that was darker, and then the lighter one was like, I don't.
I just like there's one where, but dinosaur is still there, and another one where they're like, oh no, computer virus, evil. And I was like, great, I like it. This is a delight. I don't know. Power Rangers is, I guess, has infinite possibilities.
It is. And I didn't realize until you said it, there was only 23 minutes. I thought they were going to give it an hour.
Yeah, no, that's like my only real
They should have
criticism.
Given it 25 minutes.
Yeah, that actually
one for every year.
There you
wow,
go.
Wow, man.
Look at
good
you.
Job.
See what I did there?
I
counted.
Did. Math.
That's right.
Adam is also doing math. He's bilingual with math.
There you go. You could be a substitute that teacher that teaches math and is also a Power Ranger.
Wow, it all comes around.
That's it.
Yeah, you have fight training, right? You
it's
can
true.
Do that.
It's true.
You can actually do that.
I've never fought a robot ninja werewolf, but who knows?
Yet.
Who knows
not
what
yet.
The future holds?
You've also never fought a math class, but there's also that.
It's true.
Anyway, that's there you go. That's,
all right.
That's Power Rangers.
That's Power Rangers.
Wait, did you want to? I have a dumb question. If you're gonna have
questions.
If you're gonna have a Zorg, what would it be? Like, what would your
know.
Thing be?
I'm not prepared for this.
You don't have. You can't come up with a.
Does that to be an animal?
Cool, yeah, the usually like you know like prehistoric creatures, but also a robot.
Saber-tooth tiger.
That's the longest silence we've ever had on this
I know.
Show.
Wow, really?
I mean,
you don't think you could just like pick one where you're like,
exists.
Here's one I like?
Saber-tooth no. tiger already exists, but I just don't want that one.
Okay. I would have like, I'd be like a mecha King Ghidorah. I would be like a three-headed.
That's not a prehistoric creature, though.
I don't care.
There's no rules.
You're like, right, here's the
it's
rule, but we broke
it. It's adjacent.
I would be...
Rule adjacent.
Let's see. I don't know. I got nothing.
Wow.
I got no Zord.
Oh my God. It would just be you.
That's right.
Yeah, it would just be a larger
be
robot version
Zord.
Of yourself.
Yes, exactly.
That's it. You just get in an elevator.
Hashtag
and like
be your own Zord.
Wow. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. I'm glad I asked that question. See, you thought it was a dumb question, but when we realized what the truth was, it was worth it. I decided now.
Changing all kinds of rules this morning.
There you go. Hey, you ever heard of this guy, Jack Ryan?
I have heard of Jack Ryan.
There was a few movies with Han Solo in them.
Yeah, there's like a whole bunch. There's like a whole bunch. There's Alec Baldwin does it.
Sorry.
Harrison Ford does it.
I only remember Patriot Games and Clear and Present Danger.
The Hunt for Red October.
You know what's funny?
That's the Alec Baldwin one.
That's the Alec Baldwin one and my favorite.
I never think
Tom
of
Clancy.
Him as Jack Clancy. And that, you know why? Because Hunt for Red October, I think... Denzel Washington and...
That's the Crimson Tide.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Not the Crimson Tide, just Crimson Tide, which I saw on TV
remember.
This past weekend, actually.
Wait, is Hunt for Red October Gene
that's
Hackman?
That's Sean Connery.
That's also Crimson Tide.
Yeah, see,
Sean
I refuse
Connery.
To remember
Sean
that.
Sean Connery.
That means I refuse to remember
the most Scottish-sounding
it.
Russian ever.
That's why I don't remember this movie, because I just think of Crimson Tide.
Some things in here don't react too well to bullets. What he says.
He's Russian.
Yeah.
Right.
He's
because
and
Russian.
Then they, and then they bring the Russians back for the well heart. Right, there's been a wait, who is the villain in the Affleck
Some of All
Freeman?
Fears
you said
I wanna say Eastern some sort of splinter former Soviet Republic, but I'm not 100%
they do, they
sure
do
about
that's
that.
Happens. And there's also like, yeah, Russia. Boy, I was trying to watch the Shadow Recruit one, the one with Chris Pine and
I was gonna say
and
yeah,
there,
Chris
and there
Pine.
Sure is the yeah, it's like something economic disaster, something Russia, something conspiracy, and I was like, this is too real and I can't watch this.
But
too
you know,
much.
It's so weird too, because it's like
that's a 2014 too. Like
yeah.
they were ahead of the curve.
They were.
I didn't even know.
But that's not the Jack Ryan we're referring to.
No, there's a new one.
That's come out today, actually. Episodes 1 and 2 on Amazon dropped today.
Yes. Okay, so we can only we'll talk about the first two.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Austrian neo-Nazis, by the way.
Cool.
Oh,
I was right.
That,
yeah.
one.
That is the one I never watched. Yeah. And maybe I'll go back and watch it at some point. But yeah, I've seen the others, but never that one.
Okay.
So anyway, here's this one now with
John Krasinski.
With John Krasinski. Playing,
place,
which is
office.
Great. They got a JK to play a JK.
Hey,
oh,
that was pretty slick. And yeah, and he's playing it, and now it's yeah, it's like ISIS adjacent terrorists, brothers, and yeah, like Jack Ryan's an analyst, but he's got to go to Yemen, and he's got to fight some people, even though he's an analyst. Because that's because he's
like,
also a Marine.
Well, let me ask you a question.
I'm really selling this
watched,
show.
Here's the thing. I don't remember for these people out there, I'm sure, who remember this, but I feel like this is young Jack Ryan compared to what Harrison Ford
yes.
did in Patriot.
Well,
he's supposed to be
yeah.
younger,
the,
right?
I mean, well, yeah. Alec Baldwin and Harrison Ford are both older versions, right? They're both like, especially
Harrison Ford's
shtick
these,
is he comes out of retirement, basically.
Yeah,
like, he's out of the CIA
yeah.
in Patriot okay. Games, and then
book
he comes
Jack
back
Ryan.
In.
And I was a big Tom Clancy book fan in mm-hmm. the early days. I think through like Without Remorse, I really read everything that he did. Okay. And so Book Jack Ryan was that. He was in his, I guess he was in his late 30s.
That's
but
what
he was never
like.
He was never like the thing about this that we've seen as we've like Jack Ryan has become more of an action hero. And
because of the video games.
In the books, he never was. He was right. He was very much an analyst. He was an ex-soldier, but it wasn't, he'd been out of the military for a while. You know, he didn't have like elite fighting skills. It was more about figuring out what was going on and figuring out the best solution for it. And then that's why the character of John Clark in the books became very popular, because that was the special forces operative who did have the elite fighting skills and would do all the big action beats.
Yeah.
It was played by Willem Dafoe in Clear and Present Danger, which is very weird casting. Later played by Liev Schreiber. And they made a
film
with
him. That makes
more
sense.
But yeah, so that was, they've kind of molded Jack Ryan to this new model of being not only, you know, the smartest guy in the room, but also can totally kick your ass and, you know, in an action way, which is probably, I you know, it's hard. I don't want to get too down on this show. I think it does some things really well in what I've seen in terms of like building suspense and moving the plot along and everything. But it's a real fantasy on a lot of levels, in the sense of Jack Ryan being this character who can pretty much do everything.
Yeah.
Like, he is the smartest guy in every room. He knows what's going on when no one else does. And then also when it's time to fight, he can also kick everyone's butt. And yeah. And
it's a little
way,
Tom Cruise. Yeah.
and also in the way, like, there is no way that, and, you know, I used to honestly to take it way back in college, I majored in diplomacy and international security.
Oh, wow.
And I was in the School of Foreign Service at Georgetown. And my goal coming out of that was to work at the CIA. And so I read up a lot on it. And there is no world in which they'd be like, you know what? You're a financial analyst. We're going to fly you to Yemen to this secret base to
interrogate
in the middle. Yeah, like that would never, ever happen. That analyst would brief somebody else who would brief somebody else who would be the person to go. Yeah. So it's a bit of a fantasy show, and you have to kind of buy into that fantasy. I mean, and it's a fun fantasy, I guess, on a certain level, to be the person who knows everything and can also do all the action stuff. I think to really get something out of it is you have to be able to buy into that fantasy a bit.
The only thing, and again, not necessarily my cup of tea. I honestly think I'm the demographic, but it's. What I did see of it that I thought was interesting in the action scenes, there were certain camera movement and stuff they did. I'm like, oh, this is straight out of Rainbow Six, you know. And then something else was a little bit like when they're in the city and it's not the city, when it's dark and there's some like fight scenes and you're sort of like on the ground trying to find your way in and stuff like that. That felt a little Ghost Recon. So I'm like, okay. I think they're trying to also give something to a little bit to the Tom Clancy video game crew, because those conversations in the game also make me laugh, because it's like, wait, that would never happen, you know? And I don't know. I like you said, I like some of the action scenes. I like some of the drama, the buildup, but I don't know if this is something that I'm going to be sitting up watching this holiday weekend or on subsequent weekends. How about you, Danny?
I mean, I'm not a big spy person. That was, you know, like, mm-hmm. The reason that we wound up talking about it was because, I mean, like, in my mind, you know, like stuff like this and James Bond, it's like, it is fantasy, right? Like, it is like, here's somebody that goes and does the impossible thing, who, you know, I mean, like, again, it's like really weird, like straight out of Doctor Who. Doctor Who is the guy who knows everything in the room, or the person now, person that knows everything and is also able to sort of action their way out of a situation, depending on the incarnation. But, you know, like David Tennant's Doctor was very actiony. John Pertwee in the 1970s was a James Bond-esque Doctor. So, you know, I think it makes sense to talk about it. But, yeah, man, I find myself wanting to like it. I want to like it. You know, I like John Krasinski. In the first episode, when they introduce this sort of, you know, terrorist character, I thought there's a potential for there to be some dimension here for this guy. He's, you know, like, not to give too much away, but, you know, he experienced what it is to be an innocent on the wrong side of an American campaign when he was really young, when he was a kid, and had had obviously a very profound impact on him. But they, in the episodes that we've seen, it's like they start to touch on it and then they move away very quickly.
No, I had that exact same feeling because my parents, before I was born, my parents traveled around the world, and my mother, I remember my mother and my aunt saying that they remember traveling to Lebanon. And Lebanon was one of the most beautiful places they'd ever been.
Yeah.
And I remember as a child, my mother saying, like, the Lebanon that they talk about in the news is not the Lebanon we saw. Mm-hmm. We saw this beautiful country, this beautiful city, all these amazing, beautiful people. She's like, I don't understand. Also, my mother's not from this country, so she on a regular basis is railing against American television. She's like, this is not, I don't understand what they're telling us because this is not what I saw. So it was really interesting, that beginning part with the kid, because I was like, wait, this kind of sounds like what my, it looked very idyllic, the Lebanon they were showing us. And I said that reminds me a lot of what my mother used to talk about.
Yeah, I think the thing that's hard about this show is that these fantasies, like the James Bonds of the world or the Mission Impossible Fallouts or whatever, they aren't really examinations of real world issues.
Right.
They create some big doomsday plot or some big thing you have to stop, and then in most of the time it's some evil genius, you know, or something like that. It's not an organization or like things like, and this show kind of tries to take that template and lay it over real complex real world issues, and that makes it really hard. And it does dip a toe in it. I mean, to Danny's point, like it sets up a backstory for the villain, who's ostensibly the villain, and then, but it doesn't revisit it, you know, and we don't get to see where he got radicalized. We don't get to see the first time he killed somebody and all this stuff. And like, so it's like,
we should say there are four. So like two episodes are out. Yeah, we've seen four. I can say that they have not done that yet.
I don't know what will happen by the time it's done. But the feel of it, I guess, on my end is very much like a show like Homeland, I feel like went much deeper on that stuff than this show, which seems to like dip a toe into these things.
Even the Americans.
And then move on to the next, next big action suspense beat that John Krasinski can respond to. I mean, not to give anything away, but in the third episode and on, they introduce another character who we kind of spend some time with, who is a drone pilot who deals with the issue, you know, which I think is a really interesting thing to deal with when it comes to the geopolitical situation right now, is that you have people remote controlling aircraft from tens of thousands of miles away and killing people from miles away. And what does that mean? And what is it like to be that person and everything? And the show touches on that, but then it kind of skims it. It just skims over those things. And so it's hard. It's like, if you want the fantasy aspect, it's just hard for me to fully process this fantasy story of being the super spy who can do everything over these real world, interesting, compelling issues that deserve to be explored on a certain level that's deeper than this, I think. So that was where I struggled a little bit.
The other person I like in the show, I will say, Wendell Pierce.
I love Wendell Pierce in everything.
Yeah, because he's awesome. And he plays James Greer, which is the character that James Earl Jones played in a couple of movies. And I do like his banter with Krasinski a little bit. I do like that energy. I mean, if you're a Patriot Games, Clear and Present Danger, you know, Jack Ryan fan, this is going to be your show. For me, I don't know.
I mean, look, here's, again, like only seeing four episodes, it's sort of hard to answer. But my criticism usually of the Jack Ryan stuff and Tom Clancy, I guess, in general, I think, like, if you look at the difference between the two Harrison Ford movies, let's say, Patriot Games and Clear and Present Danger, Patriot Games is a movie wherein Jack Ryan gets into the thick of something and kind of accidentally becomes part of a revenge plot, right? It becomes a story of revenge between these two, like, a group and to a degree a family, like a found family versus Harrison Ford's actual family or Jack Ryan's actual family. And that is not overcomplicated. Like, yes, there are elements of does he want to be in the CIA still or not, but it's really at its heart about that.
Right.
And then you get to Clear and Present Danger, and Clear and Present Danger is a movie about how Jack Ryan is a beautiful, perfect cinnamon roll, and the CIA is very evil and constantly screwing him over. So he has to be a maverick because he is good, and the only way to be good in this corrupt government is to be a maverick. And also, like drug smugglers.
I've never heard Harrison Ford and cinnamon roll in the same sentence.
And I say, you know, that's kind of the same thing I felt with Hunt for Red October is my favorite Tom Clancy, Jack Ryan mm-hmm. movie. And it's kind of a hybrid of those two almost, because Jack Ryan is the one, the whole thing I think is that of that movie and that story is that the Cold War and the machine that's been set up to feed it is very, it would be very easy for that whole thing to go off the rails and end in disaster. And Jack Ryan in that movie is the one who's always saying, wait, we need to talk first. You know, the initial thing is that let's shoot Ramius and the Red October out of the water because they pose a danger to the world. And he's like, wait, let's, before we start pulling triggers, let's talk, you know? Yeah. And so it's the same thing. It's less that the world is evil and more like these are giant, there's this giant geopolitical machine that is that could easily go off the rails, and he's the one who's trying to keep it on the rails. And that, to me, again, is more compelling than what you're talking about, which is the Clear and Present Danger of it, where he's the saint of
yeah.
the world.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's the thing is that yeah. like there's some almost like comedically mustache twirling bad guys, and like, you know, the stuff in that movie in Clear and Present Danger, the presidential stuff is kind of interesting. I mean, I mean, having just rewatched it, you know, it's kind of hard not to be taken in a little bit by the ending of that movie where, like, the concept is the president loses a friend and he gets really mad. And so he gets a bit revengeful. And while he is technically going through official channels by having Jack Ryan be thoughtful, he's also kind of tacitly allowed these other guys to behave in a way that is completely unpresidential and completely out of order, with a huge and dangerous consequences. And like, it's hard not to get caught up in that scene at the end where like Harrison Ford is saying to the president, like, hey, I'm going to tell people what you did. And the president's like, you know, like, how dare you? And, you know, and Harrison Ford, this is the finger pointing thing where he's like, how dare you, sir?
Yeah, of course,
it's
yeah.
so good. Like, yeah. it's really hard not to like that.
But it's funny thing about both those scenes is that they're not in this show.
Right.
Like, this show doesn't have any of that feeling yet.
Yeah, this is the thing is, I don't know quite the... Harrison Ford brings a gravitas, right? And I don't know if Krasinski, I mean, I don't think he wants to. I don't think that's really his
speed. I don't see it either.
But that's not the Jack Ryan character anymore.
That's the Jack Ryan he's playing. Right. That, like, the Chris Pine version is also not that guy. So it's a very different animal. I mean, like, that's part of why I like Greer is he's like, you know, I mean, like, that's the character with the gravitas. Like, he shows up and is like, everybody shut up. You know, and like, he, you know, like he like rolls in and is just mad. And it's just like, I've had it. You know, I've worked really hard. I've gotten kicked back down. Now I'm just trying to survive and do the right thing. And everybody is like, he's honestly, if the show was about Greer, if it was the Greer show, I would probably be more into
yeah.
it. And he is definitely the strongest part about it. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't hate it. I do think that it, you know, you run a lot of risks when you're dealing with, when you're trying to deal with real world stuff, because it's like, what do you choose to show? What do you not choose to show, right? Because, yes, here we have this sort of ISIS-adjacent villain. But, you know, they're like, the CIA is complicated. And yet, unlike Clear and Present Danger, you know, there's no president. But in fairness, like what would you even do? How would you even factor that in? Like, that's... it's, you know, when you have somebody who just legitimately never follows a single goddamn rule that presidents are supposed to do ever, like, I don't know how you incorporate that into a show, but it makes it kind of thorny. You're like, how do we, like, what do
but
we
they're
do?
Not.
How
I mean,
do
that's
we...
the thing. There's one reference early where they're like, the president's coming back from Camp David and wants something on his desk, but you don't know, they don't reference who it is. They don't say anything. So it's
kind of
like,
don't ever suggest.
The president in this show, at least as far as I've seen it, is just this entity that exists.
Whereas the clear and present danger president has a very Herbert Walker Bush vibe to him. He's a little bit Herbert Walker Bush, a little bit Ronald Reagan. Like, he's got that very like 80s president vibe, late 80s president kind of vibe to him. And I don't know, for better or worse, I thought that that was kind of necessary to that story. And yeah, I don't know. It's weird. I can't get a bead on the show yet. That's the thing.
Yeah.
And another ongoing thing about all the Jack Ryan stories is that, you know, I'm supposed to be like, his wife is so great. She's the thing that tethers him. But like every version of Jack Ryan's wife is like, she's really cool, but also she's like, oh, Jack, are you safe? Ooh, like, and it's just, I wish they would give her something. I'm like, I'm waiting. I'm waiting to be like, I'm like, are they going to give her something?
They've just met in this.
I think in this they do. And I don't want to spoil anything, but I think that she plays a bigger part in the story based on what I've read.
I'm very curious about that.
Yeah.
Because that would be a really nice opportunity. That's the thing that I feel that just really doesn't happen.
His wife is being played by
wife
and rapper, Abbie Cornish.
Oh, okay.
I didn't realize that she was an Australian rapper.
Whoa,
until
what?
I didn't know that either.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Abbie Cornish is actually a pretty well-known, I don't remember her rapper name. But years ago, that's how she got in the business. She was
fascinating.
A rapper.
I hope there's a scene where she raps. Maybe they go to karaoke. That's one of their dates and she raps.
Oh my gosh. Why not?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. I don't want to poo-poo it outright. It is a thing in the four episodes that I've watched. I don't think it's quite found the footing. It might find it. And, I would say the action sequences are pretty
intense.
Good. They're pretty intense. They're definitely in some Jack Ryan action sequences. So if you like that, then you will probably enjoy it. But hey, it's going to be a long weekend.
Tis indeed.
What are y'all going to do?
Let's talk about our weekend plans. I have something I'm ready to talk about.
Okay.
All right. What is it?
Ready?
Yep.
Yes. And we can talk about this show in general. The Good Place season 2 just dropped in streaming.
And you're finally going
to
watch it.
I'm finally able to watch it. I don't watch
TV. Here's what happens.
Don't tell me. Have you watched the whole thing?
Yes.
I haven't, so...
I'm like 5 episodes into season 2 now. And it is forking... It is just brilliant.
Said forking.
It's from the show. Because they're in heaven, ostensibly. They're not allowed to curse. So every time they try to swear, it either says forking or shirt or whatever. I just think it's a brilliant show. It's... I mean, it's really on a certain level an exploration of a lot of different schools of ethical philosophy, but it does it in a sitcom format and makes it really funny and fun and with these great characters that you really get into. That was where the scale of the one of the characters is this guy who's this total dirtbag from Florida who's died and is now in the afterlife and. He's so dumb. He's just like the dumb. He's portrayed as just like the dumbest character. And that's where the scale from 1 to 8, but then it goes up to 13, but then back down to 8. So he tells this woman, he's like, you're a total 8. And she's like, oh, that's not bad. He's like, no, that's the best. Because the scale goes up and then comes back down.
This doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
it's hilarious.
And then he's like, but this other girl, she's totally just a 10. You know, it's really just, it's super clever. And it gets better as it goes on. And all the performances are so good. I mean, Ted Danson, like, there's a scene I just saw where he has a little bit of a, like, a 3 or 4 line speech, and he gives it one way, as if he's, what, you want me to say this? Blah, blah, blah. And he, like, goes off, and the guy, and they're like, yeah. And then he just flips a switch and gives it completely sincerely. And it's just, you're just like,
oh, wow.
That's really, really good. And he's far from the only person in this doing excellent work. So I will be spending much of my weekend binging the rest of The Good Place.
Yeah.
Season 2.
Having watched the entirety of season 2, and I suppose now that it's, maybe I'll rewatch it because it's almost like a blur because it was all so good. I felt like I devoured every episode week to week. Like I housed it. I was like, hum, hum, hum. It was.
Wait, one more time.
Hum, 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 hum. And I rewatched the last episode like several times because I thought it was so good.
Who is, and what's the name of the actor who plays the woman who's stuck in the medium place? Do you know who that is?
I don't know. I don't know her name off the top of my head.
Oh my God, she's so funny. Every scene with her is just...
Because she's stuck?
Well, she's like...
She's in the medium place, and she's like a cokehead, isn't she?
Yeah, she's a cokehead.
Is it like a purgatory?
It's purgatory, basically. Okay. It's this totally bland house with like a completely adequate setup. And, you know, nothing's amazing, but nothing's bad. And and they keep coming on. She's like, every time they come, she's like, do you have cocaine?
Oh, yeah.
It'd be really great if you had cocaine. And and it's just, she's so funny. Like, the way they play with a lot of different, there's a whole, do you know about the trolley problem, Karima?
No.
A philosophy, which is this idea. It's a old philosophical, like, discussion point where it's like, you're on a trolley going down a track. And there's five workers in the track, and the brakes are out. And there's five workers in the track ahead of you. But you could turn onto another track, but there's one worker there. So do you kill the one per actively make a decision to kill the one person
to save
the other five? Or do you, through no fault of your own, honestly, kill the other five workers? Or is it your fault because you chose not to, and they...
but doesn't it eventually become like, and then the one person is like...
Is it someone you know? Yeah, and they build a whole episode around this, and the way it weaves into everything in the narrative is just really, really clever. It's a clever, clever show.
Okay.
Yeah, you should watch... have you not watched any of it?
I haven't. I'm going to...
You should go back and watch... Start with season one. Like,
I'll absolutely do that.
It's not a spoiler. I'm not going to spoil what happens in season one, but it has one of the all-time best endings ever.
Okay.
Ever.
Oh, of season one.
Yeah.
Yeah. End of season two is great, too.
I don't want
to... I just said it was good.
I'm excited. No. So, yeah. That's... And it is... I mean, ostensibly it's genre because it takes place in the afterlife and, you know, just... I would have, like anybody who has not given it a shot yet. And it's a little bit of a slow burn at the beginning because they set up a very simple premise, which is this idea of a woman who wakes up in what is supposedly heaven, but has been mistaken for someone else. She was a bad person. She shouldn't really be in the good place. The good place is what they call heaven. Mm-hmm. And, you know, her panic about that and what she's supposed to do about it. And that's the simple premise. And then they take that and just expand on it in so many fun ways. Yeah. Anyway, I'm going on a lot about this show.
No, it's cool. But I actually thought every episode was like a different storyline, but I didn't realize it was connected. So yeah. I will absolutely watch that. Okay.
And it's fun because they set up the ending. They set up a season one, sets up a very straightforward continuation in season two, and then within the first episode of season two they've dealt with that and they've moved on to something completely new, so it's really surprising too in a lot of ways, I think. Anyway, so I'll be spending much of my Labor Day weekend binging season two of The Good Place and surfing.
Sounds exciting.
Yeah.
What about you, Karima?
I'll be continuing my watch of My Hero Academia. I'm almost finished with season three. I'm just addicted to the show, and it really is. I think I said this last week. It really is a true superhero story. But what I think other people should watch, and you guys should check this out if you haven't, is the alien invasion. Well, it seems like an alien invasion movie called Extinction. That's on Netflix. That
Someone on Twitter recommended that to me.
Oh my God. You have no idea how good this movie is.
Oh.
Because in the beginning.
This is wild because I heard it was terrible.
No, and I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why a lot of people think it's terrible. First of all, it does not have the budget of really, really high action films. And I would say in the first 30 minutes, I was like, okay, we got here kind of quick. And it's very clear that they're shooting in smaller spaces. Because, you know, because they don't have the money for the big budget stuff. But the way they handle the quote-unquote aliens, I'm like, if Signs was handled like this, that movie would have been so much better. This movie is very, very, very well written. And I actually wish it was like, I actually think it should have been a series and not a 90-minute or two-hour movie. But the thing that catches you is the twist. I do. If you're comparing this to other big budget alien movies, that's not what this is. This is a smaller story about Michael Peña's a character who's he's a worker in a building with it, and he's got a family and kids and everything. It's the not so distant future, but he's having these nightmares and these visions basically of an alien attack, and then the alien attack kind of happens, but it doesn't kind of happen. It actually happens. But it turns the concept of alien on its head, and it's amazing.
Alien,
and the way they did the way
the
they
movie
do
alien.
It. No,
alien,
just the
what
concept
alien
of,
means.
Yeah, what alien means. What like invade the whole concept? Like it's using what you know and what you think you know about alien invasion lore and science fiction and everything. Kind of uses it against you.
Hmm. Is it that we're the aliens all along?
Yes and no. It's a little bit different. Most of the people that I've seen who are like, oh my God, I can't stand this, did not get to that plot twist. Once you get to the plot twist, it's like, okay, now I understand why he was being so bland and why she had that reaction and why she, like, there's certain things that happen. And in the beginning, you're like, okay, I was there for like Michael Peña. I was like, let me see him in the dramatic role, not playing a thug, not playing,
Can I guess the plot?
Okay.
It's like the Truman Show, and he's a character on a TV show about an alien invasion, but he doesn't know it.
I will say this. It's not a TV show.
Damn it. So close.
But there is his visions that he's interpreting. He is not interpreting properly.
Interesting.
What he thinks is, and he's not going crazy.
Right.
His visions are true, but his concept of them isn't. He's misinterpreting them.
Okay.
And so it doesn't get them killed. And it's interesting, too, because Mike Coulter is in it in a supporting role. And I was like, okay, so in between Luke Cage, Netflix must have been like, all right, you're doing this, too.
Yeah, we're paying you, so. Yeah.
Right. And he's not bad. It's just when he came on scene, I just expected him to just punch something. I don't know. Honestly, he in this actually had more of a... He reminded me more. Did you guys see the Halo movie he was in?
No.
The movie that you know, that live action movie that
you know what
the
you're Halo. Talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, his performance was more like that of a leadership role. But I get why people had the reaction that they had. And all I could say is wait for it, because I was blown away when the twist happened. And then when it happened, everything sort of slots into place and makes sense. It takes, you don't get to that though till the end of the second, I would say the third act really. So you're gonna have to wait for it. It is a slow burn. And one of the things that people were saying that there wasn't a lot of chemistry between Michael Peña's character and his wife, but there's a reason for that. That's what I'm saying. So a lot of people are like, oh, I can't stand this. I shut it off because they weren't gonna give it, you know, a moment. I think that's something that everybody should definitely check out. It's only 90 minutes of your life. You can do it. If you have your whole weekend.
I watched that other Netflix movie about the ghosts. So
oh, really?
Did you watch that one?
I didn't. That's next on the
list.
Like
the soldiers versus the ghosts.
It's almost,
I can't remember what it's
like,
called.
I know. Now I can't remember
off the top
either.
Of my head, but I did watch it and it wasn't bad. It wasn't terrible.
It's like, but there, isn't it like almost like the afterburn of people that have died?
Exactly.
It's not like they've. It's almost like there's a malevolent residue left after somebody dies.
Yeah.
And
that wasn't a bad movie. I wouldn't call it the best thing I've ever seen, but I enjoyed it.
Right. That's what I'm noticing about a lot of the Netflix original stuff when they're not acquisitions. Mm-hmm. There's stuff that they've actually put their own money into, like the Extinction and that one. It's sort of like, okay, really good writing, but you need a little bit more money to just get it over that, you know, that hump. But maybe that's why they're pouring more stuff into the sci-fi genre this year. That's My Hero Academia, which I'm actually watching on Crunchyroll. But if you do not want to deal with subtitles, although true anime fans shouldn't have that problem, you can watch it on Funimation where the dub is. How about you, Danny? Are you Looking
what should people do this weekend?
What should people, yeah.
They should hang out with my parents so I don't have to do it.
Oh.
No, I'm just kidding. No, no, no. I'm going to do. Maybe I'll watch something with my dad when he comes. They're coming.
Some Star Trek.
Maybe we will.
Or The Good Place.
The Good Place. yeah, no, I'll make him watch some Murphy Brown because I was like, hey, Dad, I'm rewatching Murphy Brown. And he was like, ugh. And I was like, come on, man. Anyway, no, what am I going to what was I thinking about doing?
Or what's something that you've watched that you think other people should watch?
Oh, well, Babylon 5 is on Amazon, mm-hmm. and you should watch that, especially if you've never watched it before. It's only been back on Amazon for a little while, and who knows how long that'll last. So, like, just, like, cruise right through it. It's the first season is kind of slow, but, man, like, once you get seasons 2 and 3 are, like, friggin' dynamite. Man, what else is going on? There's a movie also on Amazon that's like a real garbage horror movie that I love and is so weird called Mausoleum that I just discovered is on there right now, is on the Amazon Prime. Highly recommend. Ghost Stories just came out on streaming pretty recently. That's a good little horror movie. Man, I feel like it's just a lot of horror movies with me.
But you like horror movies. That's their genre.
Yeah. He's got problems, folks. Yeah, I don't know. That's it. That's my plan is to go on Amazon and look at some of the horror movies that are there, and that'll be in preparation for next week when we talk about The Nun.
Oh, is that what we're talking about next week?
Next yep. week is The Nun. So gear up.
I might have to sit that one out.
You should watch some like weird. There's
I don't like scary movies.
I think it was Sarah Century who wrote an article about nunsploitation. For yes.
Nunsploitation.
That's right.
Check out that article. That's the thing you can do with your wow. long weekend and watch some of the. There's like Dark Waters and The Other Hell, and like there's a ton of weird Japanese nunsploitation films. Miss 45, she dresses as a nun at one point, if memory serves. So like I've seen The Nun. The Nun is not nunsploitation, not to spoil it. It is definitely because like that stuff is like. Messed up. That's like, you know, like screwy, weird exploitation kind of film. And it's definitely not that. But there are lots of weird, creepy horror movies starring nuns. And I would recommend reading that article about nunsploitation at sci-fi.com and then checking out some of those movies. There you go. That's what you can do. To prep for The Nun, watch some messed up nunsploitation. You're welcome.
There you go.
Nailed it. All right. That's it. Now we want to hear from you, what do you think about Matt Smith? Who's he going to play? What's what kind of robot, dinosaur, prehistoric creature would you have from Power Rangers? That really great question.
Or just
that
me?
Came up with.
Would it be me?
Or would you also be me? Or will editor in chief Adam Swiderski be your robot?
Or play with them and pretend that they're in a Spanish novella.
Wow, tight. If you watched Jack Ryan, did you like the new version? What do you think of Krasinski versus Alec Baldwin and Harrison Ford and Affleck and Chris Pine, etc.? And hey, you listened to this podcast all the way through. You did it. Now, subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. Leave a review. As I've said, it means a lot. And if you say, I liked this and I didn't like that, then I talk about it with people and go, what do you guys think about this opinion? And then sometimes we change and think about stuff because we actually care about our listeners. And hey, also check out the other podcasts. There's Lord, if I named all of them, Storm Female Characters, Phantom Files, Winona Earp, got some other stuff that I think is on hiatus right now, but we still have all the Amazon podcasts, Untold Story, Debate Club, and Geeksplain. Geeksplain with our own fave guest host, Angelique Rocher. So check out all those things. That's lots of things you could do on an extended holiday weekend. Thank you for listening. Before we wrap up, where can everybody find the two of you on the internet?
You can find me, Karma, the Blurred Girl, TheBlerdGurl, all on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Just, you know what? Hit me up on Twitter. That's where you'll find me most.
And you can find me, Adam Swiderski, on Twitter and Instagram at RockTheFaces.
And my name is Danny Roth, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Danny Ordinary. That is Danny with one N, Ordinary also with one N. This has been Who Won the Week. Thank you for winning our week. And we'll see you again next week.